War is another very important phase of warfare. It has as its target not the body, but the mind of the enemy.
The trouble with the whole UFO thing is there are so many people who make up BS stories that no one can check.
Did you ever go to space?
Did I ever go to space?
Yes.
In my physical body?
Yes.
I don't believe so.
You know, somebody can step forward and say, I'll tell you what's going on in UFOs. And they can say, I briefed the president. I've done this. I know what's going on.
Briefing presidents. Did you brief Trump?
I did not meet with him personally. What I did is I put a briefing document for him together.
I don't know. I think there's too much BS in that field.
Part of the problem was that there were people within the government, within the Air Force, within the CIA, who really believed that flying saucers existed. And because they had stature, because they had rank, their opinion was considered proof.
For the very first time, the world is about to hear from a former high-level U.S. intelligence officer who says the government has some of the unidentified craft in its possession. He is revealing these exclusive details about the secret government
program. The enemy's mind.
It is words and ideas.
Ammunition used by Cyborg.
Yeah, there's a sophisticated disinformation campaign targeting the U.S. populace.
Its mission is to influence the thoughts of the enemy soldiers.
The UFO mythology develops of its own accord, and the Mirage Men will just drop a new piece of data, a new meme, some new fake documents into the mix as and when it's expedient for them to do so.
Flying saucers have invaded our planet. Washington, London, Paris, Moscow are key targets. The whole world is under attack.
People of Earth, attention.
In 1952, the Central Intelligence Agency, faced with a huge public interest in flying saucers, brought in a panel of scientists, very senior scientists. We know it now as the Robertson Panel. They concluded the government had to exercise great care to debunk the stories and individual civilians who expressed an interest in flying saucers ought to be carefully watched, said the Robertson Panel. And I believe that to be the founding document, the document giving the long-range strategy that has been followed by the U.S. government.
What do you want with me?
You are listening to the Secret Teachings Radio. I'm your host, Ryan Gable. You know, the documentary Mirage Men, which I was inspired to watch again last night after the show, detailed how U.S. intelligence officials in the United States military and United States intelligence agencies have conducted counterintelligence operations against private citizens. Of course, in the movie, it's Paul Benowitz, but there are plenty of others who have been the victims of this kind of intelligence sabotage. And the military and intelligence communities have attempted to convince those private citizens that UFOs and, by default, aliens are visiting Earth. In fact, some of the most classic UFO narratives, you've all heard them, underground bases in Dulce, New Mexico, aliens visiting Earth for resources, which has been the cornerstone, the motivation of most aliens in a lot of Hollywood movies. My favorite alien movie all time, Independence Day, of course, they were here for resources. So visiting the planet for resources, even making deals with select humans like Paul Benowitz, when it was really just the NSA translating information that he was receiving in radio signals from Kirkland Air Force Base. But these are all some of the classics, and you continue to hear them today, despite the fact that many of them can be traced back to, well, Mirage Men. And it's not just the Mirage Men. It's not just Doty, Richard Doty, and so many others. We now see people that are opportunists that just simply take advantage of these narratives to sell a story. There are countless books, films, whistleblowers, and whistleblowers in quote, who continue to promote the same stories, passing them on from one generation to another, from second-hand accounts to third-hand accounts to fourth-hand accounts. It's what I said last night was kind of like UFO thrift shopping. Everything's second, third, fourth, fifth hand. And sometimes you find things at a thrift store that are just like really gross and you don't even know why they put them on the shelf. And that's what a lot of ufology is. And I say it, unfortunately, it's unfortunately like this because, you know, for someone like myself, you've listened to this show any amount of time, you know that UFOs were really the first thing I was ever interested in, even before symbolism, even before theology. But the big issue is belief in all of this. I want to believe. Do you believe? X number of people believe in the next survey that comes out. It's always so many people believe this or that. But belief is akin to faith, and faith is dogma. And dogma means that you are subject to dis and misinformation, whether that's from intelligence agencies, the military, private citizens that just like to be skeptics, or you're an opportunity. You are the victim of an opportunist who just wants to make some money and get famous, or a combination of all of those things. Well, whether the intelligence community and military seek to disinform and misinform the public and to keep the public in the dark about whatever those objects in the sky are or hovering around military bases, etc., maybe it's just to keep the public unaware of secret projects, or it's some other reason we don't really know. We have to be very careful regardless of what we believe. And again, belief is faith, which is dogma. This is especially true when we consider that belief is basically like, in the, you know, in terms of ufology, it's become a theology or a theo-ufology. Call it whatever you want to call it. I'm just playing with words here. It's like a religion. Pleiadians and reptilians and heaven and hell, ascension and being damned to earth, and the aliens are here to save us. We need a savior, external salvation, etc. But still, there is something behind the phenomena that may not be human, and it also might not be biological. And I have a theory that if there are aliens, by whatever definition, there's a really good book on this called Hollywood versus the Aliens. It's the idea that a lot of this stuff is mechanical, robotic, and far beyond AI, synthetic intelligence. And that's where all the Majestic 12 EBE, you know, extraterrestrial biological entity came from. A lot of this stuff is convincing us that these are biological things, when in fact they're probably mechanical, they're probably technological things. But there's so many ways to look at it, it's hard to really simplify it in such a short period of time. And I wanted to get somebody else's take on this, someone else who is following and has followed for some time the UFO, I guess you could say mythologies and what is happening in real time. Jeremy Scott of Into the Parabnormal, parabnormalradio.com. That's parabnormal, parabnormalradio.com. He's linked up in our show description. Jeremy, thank you for coming on the show on short notice. I really appreciate it. I'd like your take on all of this. Start wherever you'd like, please.
Yeah, Ryan, it's good to be here for the first time, mind you. I can't believe it's been all these years that I've been listening to you, so I find it an honor to be on the program. Much like I discuss on my program when we talk about the subjects of UFOs, I believe there are several possibilities here. I don't just believe that, you know, every unidentified object in the sky is an alien spacecraft. Of course, we know that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and to make such a claim that this object in the sky is of alien origin does really require extraordinary evidence. I mean, you possibly could be right, but there's really no way to prove it. So either they are extraterrestrial craft, or they are from one of our adversaries, say China or Russia, or they're our own. And by our own, that means either craft that we've developed of our own accord, craft that have been reverse engineered, perhaps through some secrets from the extraterrestrials, or it could be some sort of clandestine operation, a private outfit, say something that doesn't operate at the government level, that's more of a black ops sort of thing. And so I think those are the possibilities. Really, it's three. Is it not ours? Is it ours? Or by not ours being another species, or is it another country's? So that those are basically the possibilities how I see it. And I almost put the same lens over the story of David Grush.
Yes, I'd like to get into that.
Because it's very, very possible that that he could be right. But it is also very possible that he has been misled, that it is a disinformation campaign, whether he knows it or not. But it like I said, the extraordinary claims require the extraordinary evidence, and this one just doesn't pass the smell test for me. I don't think it passes the smell test for a lot of people. There are folks out there who want it to be reality, and get me, I want this to be reality. I mean, I have a poster. I think you have the same poster in your studio from the X-Files, says, I want to believe.
Yes, I do. Yes.
We want to believe, but that doesn't mean we will just bow down and praise everybody who comes forward and believe everything that they say. Like I've told audiences privately and publicly, who are we to tell somebody what reality they believe they experienced? I mean, we weren't there. You can choose to believe it for yourself or not, but you didn't live through it. So who are you to tell that person what they experienced? I mean, that is their perception of the situation. And much like this story, my perception of the situation is somewhere between what David Grush are saying and the people on the far opposite side are saying. I'm saying it, the truth is probably right there in the middle, which is, yes, I think the evidence is overwhelming that UFOs have crashed here, that they have been picked up, that they have been taken to some facility, perhaps moved from facility to facility when, you know, things got a little heated and people were closing in on the location, say Area 51, Wright-Patterson. I mean, there's places that we've heard through our UFO history where we know that these objects potentially were or maybe even still are. So do I believe that, yes, UFOs have crashed? Yes. Do I believe that UFOs have been retrieved by our government? Yes. What about alien bodies? Because Mr. Grush seems to say that these, and when questioned by Mr. Colhart, so this is another species? Yes. So I believe that, yes, we probably do have some sort of specimens, whether it's a body, whether it's part of a body, because in crashes sometimes everything's not intact. So this could be an alien body that maybe was in pieces and is stored somewhere. However, where's the evidence of that? I know that there have been many credible individuals throughout history who claim to have come in contact with this stuff. There's been even a fake film out there, the alien autopsy film, which claims that it was the alien. But we know that that one was faked as well, actually, very much so. And so I think that there is some truth to what Mr. Grush is saying, that, yes, we probably do have a top secret program, whether it's still in existence or not, that has dealt with UFO crash retrievals, whether it still exists to the day to this day and on what level and where the actual evidence is. We don't even have evidence. I saw somebody calling you out about your appearance on Clyde last night because they were saying, well, he gave the evidence over to the inspector in general and Congress. How do we know that he turned over the evidence if we're going to believe that he was involved with these people who he says confided him at the highest levels and they had seen the craft? Do we just take him at his word that he's submitted that information to the inspector general and to Congress? I'm not satisfied, Ryan.
No, I'm not either. And that was a very well way of saying it, a very good way of saying it and expressing your opinion, Jeremy. The way that they have talked about this story in very small bits and pieces in, was it News Nation, is suspicious to me. I mean, obviously, Leslie Keen, the one who wrote or co-authored the article for the debrief, said that she wasn't concerned, wasn't a red flag, that there was no evidence shown to her or to News Nation. They said there was no evidence shown to them. I understood, yes, Clyde's guest last night had told me, he said, well, they're not going to show the journalist or the news outlet any kind of information because it's classified. It's like, well, if it's classified, then how is he able to talk about it? If it's classified, he shouldn't be allowed to talk about it at all, even to acknowledge the existence of such a program. But again, what he said, what David Grush said, we played this last night, is nothing that we already didn't know. He said things such as, we have crash retrieval programs. Well, yeah, of course we do. We have them. We've had them since the Cold War and before. We have had them for warfare, for spy planes, balloons, etc. Anything that crashes is unidentified until we identify it. So, yeah, we have crash retrieval programs for UFOs, but that doesn't mean alien spaceships. That's something I could have told you. That's something there's official government records of that kind of stuff, and you don't need whatever this Grush guy has to prove that. The other thing, Jeremy, that gets me is the credential argument. Sure, he's credentialed, but that doesn't mean what he's saying is true. Anybody can be credentialed. Anybody can make a statement. But again, you have to provide proof and evidence. And this is the thing that really gets me. I don't like when we have to be pro or anti, when we have to agree or disagree. Sometimes I think it's best to just be neutral and to say, look, we've heard these stories before. We've heard the federal government and all their little UFO projects say, oh, there's big news coming, big news coming. Everybody's been briefed. Everybody's seen the documents, and then nothing comes of it. Nothing that we haven't heard before. And in fact, I've got one quote I want to share with you here on that very subject. In 2023, you saw the report that came out from the ODNI, the Director of National Intelligence, earlier mm-hmm. this year.
Yes.
Okay. So that report said this. It concluded that a lot of these unexplained objects, quote, demonstrated unusual flight characteristics or performance capabilities. And that was basically one of the conclusions of the report. What they couldn't identify, they had flight characteristics and performance capabilities that were beyond what we could understand or imagine or beyond what our technology was. Now, I want to also read you from 1947. This was the Roswell year, Maury Island, etc. 1947, General Nathan Twining, head of the Air Force Material Command, said, because this was the government, their official stance on this at the time, the UFO phenomena is something real and not visionary or fictitious. These objects, he says, display, quote, extreme rates of climb, maneuverability, particularly in roll, and motion. In other words, Jeremy, in 1947, Nathan Twining was saying exactly what the 2023 ODNI report concluded, that we still don't know what they are, and they have these abilities to move and climb and rotate, and we still can't understand them. To me, we haven't heard anything new since 1947, in essence. What do you think about that?
No, it's the same old song and dance. And what it is we're hoping that the whistleblowers, I mean, David Grush is 36, so if he continues on this beat, unless he's, you know, taken out for knowing or saying too much, only time will tell. But if he's actually in the know and he continues on this beat, that is a serious, serious problem for our government, because most of the individuals who are involved in the disclosure game are getting up there in age, if you know what I'm saying. The government is hoping that they die with whatever it is they know. They're hoping that they don't pass it on, that they haven't written a book, that they haven't put it in a documentary, because then it just goes by the wayside. And then the cycle starts over. You get individuals who are interested in this. They start to ask the questions. They hush it down like they do, hoping that they'll just be able to buy some time. The others who were interested at one point in their life, you know, 50, 60 years into it, realize they've been played their whole life and they're never going to get the answers. And they figure it's just a waste of time, and they stop caring. And all it is a cycle. It's a cycle that comes and goes, where we just deny and deny and deny. And we're hoping eventually the problem will go away. The problem is now this story is not going away. I mean, since 2017, it has been a constant flow of information. And really since 2021, it has been a constant flow of information, where there's seemingly developments almost daily here, certainly weekly and monthly. And that wasn't the case in previous years. I mean, you'd be far-fetched to even get a credible sighting now and then to even talk about. So it's like standing underneath the UFO faucet. There's a lot coming out of the tap, but not all of it smells good.
Do you think a lot of this, too, is, you know, we have members of Congress, first term, second term, people haven't been in government very long, and they're faced with these kinds of investigations or, you know, the Senate hearings, et cetera. And we just, I think, as a public, collectively think, well, government must know. Well, if anybody knows anything, it's maybe one or two people who came across something. I don't think that there's some conspiracy to conceal this within even some of the higher ranks, per se. I think that members of Congress are just as interested in the subject as people like you, Jeremy, or people like me. And it's just like that episode of The X-Files. I think it was the Dreamland episode where the guy that runs Area 51 asked Fox Mulder, are UFOs real? They didn't even know. And that's kind of what I feel.
Well, speaking of not knowing, they don't know what questions to ask. They ask about some of the most basic stuff and not about like the experiencer level of stuff. I mean, the wild things that I have heard out of mouths of experiencers over the course of the years of doing my program, as you probably have as well, this stuff is what we need to be asking the questions about. We need to get over are these things actually real and what are they, and actually talk with those who have experienced, you know, this reality. Because as I've been saying on my program, you know, we're not going to get anywhere with individuals who have been, you know, pinpointed to a committee asking questions at the elementary level. I mean, this is not an elementary subject. This is a college or even higher level than that kind of subject, and it's being treated with kid gloves.
Yeah, that is very true. That's a good point. You know, also, you have a long history. I know you know this, but for the audience, going back to what you first said when I brought you on, for the audience that doesn't know, this subject obviously goes back way before World War II. You've got famous accounts in the 1500s of these large objects, globe or cigar-shaped objects, appearing over Nuremberg, Germany, also over Basel, Switzerland in 1566. And you also have the accounts, which, yes, I take a soft approach to quote ancient aliens, Jeremy, but, you know, the stories of the Vimanas and the flying cities and the battles and the heavens and the sky. And these things are even, again, painted, the case of Germany in 1561 or Switzerland in 1566. So this has been going on for a very long time, whether it's, you know, military, it's private, it's an adversary, a foreign adversary today. Those things just compound a phenomena that has occurred for hundreds, probably thousands and thousands of years. There's even reports this is from like 216 BC. It was reported. There was a book written by a guy named Julius. I forget his last name. It's like Obsequins or something. But he wrote this book about these things in the sky that he called ships or shields, which at the time, that's all they had to identify them as. And I think the same thing's happening today. As we advance technologically, you know, we have this idea. You watch Ancient Aliens and they show you the guy in the spacesuit and they say, well, that looks like our guy in a spacesuit. And it's like, well, that's kind of like pareidolia. We just see things in the past and relate them to, well, that must be like an Apollo 11 suit. And I think that we have to be very careful there, because we're just taking things that have never been understood fully and we're applying our understanding, which is understandable, our understanding of things today technologically, when whatever we're dealing with, you know, the root core of it that goes back is probably beyond anything we can fathom or imagine. It's probably not even, in my opinion, even in our lexicon to be able to describe it. We really don't know. And I think it's beyond the military. It's beyond other governments. It's beyond even, you know, basic nuts and bolts craft. It's beyond that.
So why can't we say that? Why can't we just say, look, we don't know what these are. We're investigating, rather than just discourage individuals from coming forward. I mean, I do have to give Mr. Grush, credit for coming forward. I think he's got balls to do so. I find it a little suspect some of the reporting that's been done, and we can talk a little bit more about, Leslie and Ralph and why they felt pressured to get the story out.
Yes.
But, you know, it takes guts to come out and say this. And by our government telling people, oh, well, we have no evidence to back up these claims, and continuing to just reinvestigate what they can explain instead of investigating what they can't explain, it's only going to discourage future witnesses or whistleblowers, or however we want to refer to them, from coming forward, because they feel that they're not going to be taken seriously. They're going to be discredited, and they may, you know, lose their clout.
Yes, and then also to I think parallel that is the idea that I agree with you there, and I think what happens in parallel is that you have opportunists then that see that they can say pretty much whatever they want to say, and it'll be taken seriously by the believers, and then they can work their way into, I guess, ufology, the community, whatever, into the news, and they can sell a story for their 15 minutes of fame, you know, for a little bit of money. And if this story, which I suspect that it will die out and nothing much will come of it. That's my opinion. That's my intuition. I might be wrong. I kind of hope I am wrong, but I'm not, you know, I don't believe one way or the other. I don't really care one way or the other per se. But if this story dies out like I think it will, this is going to be another scar on ufology. And that's why it has all the hallmarks of Elizondo not showing much, if any proof at all the hallmarks of a Corey Good just making up a story, lying about it. Doubling down, tripling down, making up another story, hoping people forget about it, making some money, moving on. It has all the hallmarks of that, but just more sophisticated. And I think if this story falls apart, this is going to be a huge scar on ufology. And this is what makes it more difficult to do our jobs and even to have interest in the unknown, because you don't know where the dis and misinformation is going to come from. It's not just the government. It also comes from opportunists and everybody in between.
Well, and it doesn't help when you have conflicting information, like the statement you read from the report that came out earlier this year, and then a report in March from Sean Kirkpatrick, head of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, who talked about motherships, alien probes, and the possibility that they could defy. In fact, it says that the objects appear to defy all physics. Yet in the hearing, or more of a briefing, I guess it was back in April, he literally said that there is no evidence of any of these objects violating the known laws of physics. So what is it? Do they have these superior capabilities or do they not?
See, that's where I think about the wordplay, and that's where I think about that movie Mirage Men. I think that the way that certain words are used and the way that they're crafted together with other words and the way that they're presented, that I think is the most telling thing. If you listen very carefully to David Grush's story and the way that News Nation reported it, you notice how he's very vague about things, and you notice how he sort of uses the same kind of language that you've heard over and over. There's just something off about that story. We've got about 30 seconds, but go ahead real quick.
Yeah, both Lou Elizondo and David Grush both left their government jobs in order to go on this course. So that begs the question, were they paid off?
Possibly. He supposedly retired at 36, which is hard to believe for an intelligence official. But anyway, Jeremy Scott is our guest this evening. His website, parabnormalradio.com. That's parabnormalradio.com. Our website, thesecretteachings.info. I'm Ryan Gable. More with Jeremy after this. Don't go anywhere.